Gloucester History Festival.
Beams in the Blackfriars were donated by Henry III. And
I mean, there's so much great stuff that goes on here. If anyone's not been to Gloucester History Festival.
The Gloucester History Festival special series on History with Jackson.
Hello and welcome back to the History Jackson podcast. Welcome back, Nicola. How are you doing?
I'm really good, Jackson. Thank you so much for having me back. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you very much for coming on again. I'm really excited.
Me too. Yeah.
So your talk today is on Elizabeth and Mary.
Yes.
Now, last time we were talking about another work that you did on Elizabeth. What's the inspiration for this work and this talk today?
Well, this is really based on my new book, Young Elizabeth, and the one of the really, really key relationships in that work that I've done is the relationship between Elizabeth and her half-sister Mary I. And it's something that I think is often quite overlooked. We tend to think of Elizabeth and Mary as individuals, but not necessarily as their relationship as sisters. So that's where the inspiration comes from. Really excited to share the story. It's very gripping.
And I think it's really nice that you're adding scholarship to that area as well, because that young part of Elizabeth's life's often been ignored, and Mary's reign has mostly been ignored as well.
Yeah.
So what was the Elizabeth's role within Mary's reign, her time on the throne?
Well, in one word, it's rival. Because just by nature of the fact that Mary is 37 when she comes to the throne and she's childless, it automatically makes Elizabeth her heir until Mary can produce a child. And it's a very vulnerable position for Elizabeth to be in, especially because her relationship with Mary very quickly deteriorates. So there is a perhaps unintentional, perhaps at times intentional rivalry between them. And it's a very, very difficult path for Elizabeth to navigate.
And I can understand how Elizabeth's kind of in a position where she doesn't know what to do and how others are going to possibly use her position. Does that happen?
Oh gosh, it does happen. Yeah, absolutely. And very, very quickly into Mary's reign that happens. And we see Elizabeth get into great trouble during the White Rebellion of 1554, which is a plot to overthrow Mary and replace her with Elizabeth. And we don't know exactly how much Elizabeth knew about this plot. I think that she probably was aware of what was going on, but rather crucially, didn't tell Mary about that. So that is the most dangerous moment in Elizabeth's life during Mary's reign, for sure.
And how does that affect their personal relationship? Because most of what we've spoken about is a political and a religious relationship. How does it affect them as sisters?
It leads to the complete deterioration and breakdown of their relationship, because Mary is convinced that Elizabeth has been plotting against her, so much so that she sends Elizabeth to the Tower in the hope that this will force her to confess. And if you think about it, it's quite a cruel move in many ways, because Mary knows full well that Elizabeth's mother, Anne Boleyn, has died within the walls of the Tower of London, and Elizabeth must have been very fearful the same would happen to her. So by this time, the relationship between the sisters is in shatters, and sadly, it never recovers.
And yeah, you can see through what happens in Mary's reign that there is a real fear of what's going to happen to Mary herself and possibly people moving over to Elizabeth. So what happens to Mary with Elizabeth as she thinks out of the picture?
Well, so Mary is absolutely convinced that with Elizabeth in the Tower, Elizabeth will be forced to confess to her crimes, and then who knows what Mary may have done with her. But unfortunately for Mary, that doesn't happen. Elizabeth utterly refuses to confess to any wrongdoing. And for Mary, this actually poses a huge dilemma and a great problem, because it means that Mary has to hope that other evidence comes forward to provide the final nail in Elizabeth's coffin, if you like. But actually that doesn't happen, and none of the Wyatt rebellion conspirators implicate Elizabeth in any way, shape or form. And it becomes very clear that Mary's counsellors aren't prepared to act against Elizabeth. So I think that this poses a real problem for Mary, because she knows that something has to be done to deal with her sister, but she doesn't quite know what that is, because she hasn't got enough evidence to take any final action against her. So it's a very, very difficult time. And as time progresses, it becomes clear there isn't going to be any evidence and that Elizabeth can't really remain in the Tower justifiably. And so eventually Mary's forced to concede that Elizabeth will leave the Tower, but that doesn't mean that Mary's prepared to allow her to go free, and she's instead placed in house imprisonment at the old Royal Palace of Woodstock.
And it's really fascinating to see that dynamic between these two sisters change, shatter, but become a political dynamic as well, not just a familiar relationship.
Yeah.
Now, I've already asked you the fun question that we've been asking everyone here today, so I want to ask you another one related to your book.
Okay.
What was the most interesting fact that you learned, found out about Elizabeth?
Okay. Can it be a theory?
Yeah, go on then. Okay. I'll take theories. I love them.
Because I think that it's a theory that's really interesting and actually quite likely, but I can't prove it.
Okay.
And it relates to this tiny, incomplete copy of Coverdale's New Testament. And it's in the British Library, and it contains a poem that was written by Elizabeth. And I'm convinced that this was written by Elizabeth whilst she was in the Tower of London imprisoned, or shortly afterwards. And it's just quite incredible to hold that book in your hand. It's something that it's actually something that I think has been largely overlooked and ignored. It was certainly something that I was unaware of until I began to study this period of life, of Elizabeth's life, which is why I'm going to call it a fact, because it's something that I learned about. It's an object. But it's just amazing to think about the circumstances in which that poem may have been written, and to consider in either scenario that this is an object that Elizabeth once had in her hands and once took the care and time to inscribe something in.
That's absolutely incredible. I love that one. I think that's probably one of my favourite theories on the podcast. So where can people grab a copy of your new book?
They can grab it from any good bookstore. There's lots of fabulous independent bookstores that store it. And some of those I've been doing the rounds around the country and dedicating some of those. So there are signed copies available. But otherwise, you know, Waterstones, Amazon, all the usual places.
And you've been incredibly busy on social media promoting it. So it's been really fun watching the process of it. But you've also got another project, which I really want to give some airtime to, because I think it's fantastic. It's the Tudor Trio. Could you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tudor Trio is something, a platform that I run with my two really good friends and Tudor colleagues, Dr. Owen Emerson and Kate McCaffrey. And we're basically intent on bringing the world of the Tudors to the general public and making it as accessible as we possibly can. So we are busy recording behind the scenes footage at some of the country's best known Tudor locations. We're recording interviews. We're even going on tour this October. So very excited. Oh,
sounds awesome. I can't wait. Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's brilliant.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.